Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
This episode is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Get in, loser! Mean Girls is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Join Katie Heron as she meets the plastics and Tina Fey's new twist on the modern classic. Get ready for more of the rumors, backstabbing, and jokes you loved from the original movie with some fetch surprises. Rated PG-13. Wear pink and head to ParamountPlus.com to try it free.
What's going on, everybody? Hope you are having a wonderful week so far. Before we get into podcast, please hit subscribe. Please tell your mates about it and give us a review at the end of it, because it just keeps the podcast going. Podcast time. I'm really excited about this one. Melee doesn't really need any introduction. Is, for me, in my eyes, one artist that sits in his own lane and sits in the lane so confidently and so well that he stands above a lot of artists as if quality of what he produces. His record label Club Bad has an amazing kind of look and vibe about it, and you know exactly what you're going to get when you get a Club Bad promo through. Especially, he's been doing this for so long, and I didn't know that he's been doing it for as long as he is. And in the podcast we spoke about pretty much everything from day one of when he became successful, and then how he kind of changed his sound over the years. Really interesting podcast, really great conversation. I love this guy. He's one of the nicest guys in the industry. So without further ado, Melee. Mr. Melee, what's cooking?
All right, bro. How's it going?
Good, mate. You all right?
Yeah, I'm all good, bro. I'm still like, I was in Malta for 3 days over the weekend. So I'm still kind of like... It's like 3 day party, 3 day hangover. What we on Wednesday, so yeah, it'll probably.
So you're probably, feeling it?
Yeah. Do you know what? Like, it was like Monday and Tuesday. I was, but I feel alright today. Yeah. Not too bad. Yeah.
Sound a little croaky.
Yeah, it's these things that I'm addicted to, like everyone else now, like these vape pen things. So I was never ever a smoker ever in my entire life, and no, I just smoke these vapes like everyone else, which is really annoying.
I've never tried one. What?
Really?
Yeah, like, why are they so addictive? Is it the nicotine? Or
I
is
don't
it...
know. Yeah, I think it's the nicotine, but it's like, I get like this like watermelon one, which I'm like really addicted to now. And it's, yeah, it's a problem, but there we go.
I'm slightly worried what those are going to come like in like 10 years time.
You know what? Like, it's like you see all like these articles and like TikToks about them, and like I'm just like scrolling past them. Like, no! I want to read it.
Avoidance is best.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's mad what we do to our bodies, right? Without like the shit that we put in them.
It's crazy, man. I mean, you don't drink though, right?
No. I'm pretty, apart from sugar, I'm pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like I've gone through sort of, you know, I've gone through sort of like things over the last few years of trying to be healthier, like even just like balance, right? It's like, you know, it's just, you know, I think like doing this job and, you know, traveling it kind of is impossible to eat well. Like, it's something that I've just always struggled with. And, you know, like, obviously drinking and stuff like that. I'm just trying to balance it in the week as best I can. But I think, like, over the last few months, I'm way off balance.
Do you drink every show?
Yeah, I did. I think I did two or three shows. I know that doesn't sound amazing, but I did two or three shows this summer where I didn't drink. And I was really proud of myself, actually, because it kind of like, I don't know, I think, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into it, but I think, you know, being a sort of very anxious person and standing in front of thousands of people, you know, having a shot of tequila helps. You know what I mean?
Do you think it actually helps, or do you think it's more like the mental, like, play of it? Like, where it's like that smoking thing, right? It's like, you don't actually have to smoke, but the thought that your brain is telling you that you have to smoke rather than the actual, like, process.
Yeah, I mean, that is a worrying thing, because it's like the comfort of having a bottle of fucking tequila next year is not a great place to be. Do you know what I mean? But I don't know. I mean, it's, yeah, maybe it is a mental thing. Yeah. But I suppose it does give you that, like, extra boost. But I think, like, the few shows that I did do where I wasn't drinking, I mean, the first 30 minutes were fucking horrendous.
Really?
Because I was just like, I just felt naked out there, man. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. Like, I just, you know, I was like, oh my God, everyone's looking at me. Mm. Even though that's the nature of the job. But then, like, you know, 30 minutes in, I was like, wow, this is actually great. I'm like, I think, you know, I kind of realized that, you know, I didn't really need it. Do you know, like, kept pushing me to do it? It was Tisha. So, like, we're, like, quite good mates. And she was just like, oh, you just drink way too much when you DJ. And I was like, I know, but it's da-da-da. And she was like, honestly, just, like, try once or twice. Do it without. And I did it. And, like, I remember texting her and being like, oh, my God, this is amazing. It was so good. And I was so proud of myself.
Does she not drink?
She does, but, like, not. I think she does quite a lot of show sober, I think.
Yeah.
You know, I want to get to that point eventually, you know. It's like, it's not, you know, I don't, you know, I'm 30 now. I don't want to be party guy forever. Do you know what I mean? It's
like, I think the thing is like, there's this, I don't know, you might be able to kind of say a little bit more on it, but like, there's this huge thing of like sober DJ and then like not drinking and everything like that. And I think, I don't think there's actually anything wrong with it. I think what the issue is the minute it kind of starts affecting the other parts of your life. Right. And I guess the aftermath of the fact that we're doing God knows how many shows a week, and then we have to live our normal day lives afterwards that, and then still get in the studio, maybe it affects that. But like, as long as it's not affecting, I don't see any issue in it.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it has not so much the drinking, but being as busy as I have been over the last few months, that has definitely affected, you know, studio work, relationships, like everything.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not so much the partying, it's just that, you know, being on the road 3-4 times a week, and then the last thing you want to do when you get home is go to the studio or just be a normal person. You just want to lie in bed or play FIFA or whatever and just do nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And just try and be a normal person as much as you can. I think that's more the thing that I've, you know, struggled with over the last few months, I suppose.
Do you think that's purely based around drinking though, or do you think that's around like just tour schedules?
Because, yeah, it's just schedules, I think.
Because I found it as well. Like, my weeks are, I like have to like schedule my weeks out, because otherwise it's just like I can find myself like busying myself doing fuck all.
Yeah. Well, I'm the same, but it's like, I don't know if I'm kind of, you know, somewhat ADD or ADHD or whatever, but, you know, it's, I'm also really bad at saying no to things because I feel like I'm in like this such like a privileged position that I feel like I have to say yes to everything, and I feel guilty if I say no. I've noticed over the last few weeks, I've started saying no to a few things. But, you know, I am a bit of a people pleaser, I suppose. So I just want to be like, yes, 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 yes. And then all of a sudden we've got a list of fucking 30 things. And then, Do you know what I mean? And then that inadvertently you start letting people down anyway. So it's, do you know what I mean?
Where does the whole people pleasing thing come from?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think it's, I think I've always been like that since I was a kid, really.
Yeah.
I don't really know. I think it's just like in my nature as a person, just to be like that. I've always been like, I'm kind of like from, I suppose like my mom is exactly the same. Like we would rather other people be all right than ourselves. Than us. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, so it's like, I think I've kind of spoke to my therapist about this, but I've kind of carried that on into like adult life, I suppose. Which is, you know, that's my personality. I can't change my personality, but I think it does, you know, it does bring up its own sort of problems as well. I think
you can still make changes in your life though that like you prioritize certain things, right?
And
so it doesn't necessarily affect. I think also for me, like, I don't know if you can relate, but like when I guess because we're doing what we've always wanted to do, mm-hmm. and there comes a point for me is like, it's like almost say yes to everything because you don't know when it's going to stop.
Yeah.
And it's like that, almost that, like that imposter syndrome where you're like, I don't know when this is going to end. I don't know when I'm going to be out of demand. I don't know. Like I'm a tweet away from being fucking game over.
Bro, do you know what? Fucking hell, man. I'd like just change the subject a little bit. Like tweets and stuff. I fucking tweeted something the other day, right? And like, you know me. I'm a very sort of tongue-in-cheek person. Yeah. I don't take myself too seriously at all. I tweet, so I was at Defected Festival the other day, right? And someone played an old remix that I did about 7 fucking years ago. A remix of George Morel, Let's Groove, that I did. And this fucking remix is coming out. I was like, yeah, fucking drums are fucking sick. I fucking love this tune. And I was like a bit drunk, and it was like in my mind, I was going, that's fucking great, that. And then it came in and I was like, oh shit, it's mine. Fuck, I completely forgot about that. Right? So I did a tweet about it. Not fucking serious, as I'm talking to you now. Bro, the amount of fucking DJs and people, this is so egotistical.
What?
This is fucking bullshit. And I was like, bro, like, I was having a fucking laugh. Like, the irony is so lost on Twitter.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
No, I mean, it was like, look, I love Lee from within, but he fucking dug me out. And I was like, bro.
What?
Yes. I was like, bro. We're mates, like, what, like, and it was just like, oh man, it was like the pylon, and some guy was like, this is fucking tragic, and I was like, oh, do you know what, but that's exactly what you're saying. One tweet, like, people take that shit way out of context. I
listen to quite a lot of podcasts, like, with like comedians, and this is something they talk about, and it's one of the reasons why I stay away from Twitter to a certain extent, because it's fucking gross, but like, there's a lot of people in this industry that are willing, they're like, support you until they're willing to jump on you on one thing.
Facts.
And like, we all have friends in this industry, but I like, realistically, there's a lot of people that I'm not going to talk to if I wasn't in this industry. If I stopped tomorrow, I can guarantee you, I could probably put like on my hand how many people are going to contact me after. And I think, like, this is the gross thing about not just this industry, just life right now. It's like, people are willing to, like, just fuck over anyone if they can get the slightest bit up on them. And it fucking does my head in.
Yeah. Do you know what? Like, it kind of, I don't know, like, I am a very sensitive person, right? I'm a super sensitive person. Yeah. And I think, like, a lot of artists are.
Yeah.
You know, we all are fucking... Isn't fucking everyone insecure? Do you know what I mean? Like,
totally.
If I wasn't somewhat insecure, right, I wouldn't have tweeted that.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. I'm having a joke, but it's like, there's some sort of being like, ah, yes. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And it did kind of get me down a bit, because I was like, oh, like, I'm not that, that's not that type of person that I was being made out to be. I was a bit like, oh, that kind of sucks. Do you know what I mean? So I think, but I don't think Twitter's a great place if you are a sensitive person.
No, I just don't think Twitter's a good place. Like, generally.
I'm into football, right? And you know, some of the shit that you see on Twitter about footballers. And it's like, all right, these guys get paid millions and millions of pounds, but fucking hell, man, like, it's brutal.
Yeah.
Like, the type of shit that they have to sort of read, and I don't know. I think... Yeah, I'm gonna stay off Twitter.
I think what it is people just have. I think because you're not saying it in person, and like no one will say half the things that they say on Twitter in person. Did you ever see that Derren Brown show that he did? I can't remember what it was called. I think it was called like Masked,
no.
And he had like an audience of people that were all masked, and they could make the decision of what was going to happen to the person on the screen.
Wow. Okay.
And deep. Yeah, it was really dark, but because they were all masked, they were all anonymous. So like they had no repercussions of what was going to happen. And they all picked the worst thing possible that would happen to this guy. And then at the end of it, like spoiler alert, it's fucking years old. But at the end of it, they all picked for this guy to go and rob something and run away and get caught. But then he got ran over and died.
What?
Like, it's not actual true, but they filmed that bit afterwards. But they all chose for him to get, like, caught.
Wow.
But they didn't... And the moral of the story was, like, when you're unmasked, when you're masked or when you're anonymous and you don't have any consequences, like, you're willing to say what the fuck you want.
Yeah. And, I mean, I'm sure you've had it a lot of times, you know... If people don't enjoy your set or whatever, you get fucking stick, don't you? Like, I get, like, fucking... Someone shouted, it's like, I've got shit shouted from me from fucking cars. I live in Liverpool, like, you're fucking shit. Or, like, something like that. And you're just like, what? I think it's just playing music.
Mate, I think that's just because you live in Liverpool. No disrespect, but come on.
Yeah. But, like, it's really not that fucking deep. Do you know what I mean? And it's, like, people take it way too seriously, man. And it's I don't know. I kind of have this thing where it's like, if you're not kind, if people aren't getting on your back about things, you're obviously not shaking shit up that much. You know what I mean? If you're like really shaking up the fucking world and doing some really cool shit, like it's gonna rub some people the wrong way.
100%. I released that Depeche Mode remix that I did. We kind of just like bootlegged it out, and a bunch of like DJs got so pissed with me about it.
Really?
A bunch, yeah. And it's just like, we knew that it would get taken down. Like, we tried to clear it, we couldn't clear it. So we just like, it was, everyone was playing it. So we were just like, fuck it, let's just put it out.
Yeah.
We know it's going to get taken down, but like, let's just put it out so people can have it.
Yeah.
It went in like straight at like Techno number one Beatport, and it pissed so many DJs off. I got so many DMs.
That's the thing, though, because if that record would not, you know, if only a few people were playing it, like no one would care.
Exactly.
But like, you know, it's kind of like, it's the gift and the curse, man. It's like, woo, I've got a fucking number one, but here's loads of people that are just going to give me a load of stick.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I guess, like, yeah, it must be tough, because I think also like the more successful people get, like let's be honest, like John Summit, like, how much shit has that kid like been got over the last like 3 years from DJs talking shit and from fans talking shit, et cetera, but just purely because he's more successful than everybody else.
That is it.
Yeah.
That is literally it. And it's like, you know, you've kind of, you know, I suppose it just is what it is. Like, it's shit, but, you know, you've kind of got to be able to deal with these things. I think, like, when I was, you know, I kind of came straight out of school when I was 17 and started being a DJ, never had another job, like, to this day. And, you know, I remember making a record called Ambience when I was like 2015. So I would have been like 20, like early 20s or whatever. And it sampled the Lita Holloway. And I was like so ignorant about the sampling of the Lita Holloway, because I was like a kid. I come from hip-hop and grime and that sort of thing. I didn't really understand like house and disco and things like that as deeply as I do now.
Yeah.
And you know, this record went really big and Annie Mac was playing it a lot and stuff like that, and it got on the daytime of like Radio 1 playlist. I remember like the amount of abuse that I got from the sort of like house and disco community for sampling Lolita Holloway was fucking horrendous. Like some guy, I remember some guy like telling me to go and kill myself.
Jesus.
And, and I was like, bro, over
record.
I was a fucking kid and I was just like, I really don't understand this. Mm. Like I couldn't really get my head around it. And then I remember, I think we didn't clear the sample for it. It's all cleared now, but I didn't clear the sample for it. And I remember it was Dave Lee or Joe Negro as he was called then. Mm. It was from one of, I think he owned the rights to the vocal or something. And I remember on the day of the release, he did this big post about it. And he was like, my lawyers will be in touch and all this sort of shit. And I was like, oh no, like what? Like, I was like, I don't want to make music anymore. This is horrible. It's like, it was just a pylon of the house and disco community. I was like, oh shit. But I think like stuff like that is kind of, you know, it's kind of like taught me to have a bit of a thicker skin. Like, you know, I'm still a very sensitive person, but, you know, I think you've got to take all these things with a pinch of salt, man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think I forget as well sometimes, but like the internet is a different life to real life.
Yeah.
And like you can literally switch the internet off for you and just get on with your everyday life.
Yeah.
And I think that's the internet's weird because I guess we grew up without the internet. Can you remember growing up without the internet?
Yeah. I think I remember being about, I would have been about, when did like that 50 Cent album come out? I would have been about 10, I suppose.
Mm.
I remember having like AOL, I remember like that AOL, dial-up, all that sort of shit. I remember like downloading like the 50 Cent album on like my mum's card on iTunes or something and like getting really, really annoyed. So I think, probably about 10 years of my life, when it really started to sort of, when it became like an everyday thing would have been how old are you?
32.
Yeah. So it would have been like when we were about sort of like, I like 13, something like that. Like MySpace sort of time.
MySpace and MSN Messenger.
Yeah. So it would have been, when we were about 13, I suppose. So it's kind of like 13 years of your life.
Yeah. 2003, I guess for me.
Yeah.
How old are you?
30.
Yeah. Yeah. It's mad. It's crazy. Because, like, over the years, the internet's evolved so much and now it's so part of our lives. But, I remember when I first started DJing, and even when I was DJing for, like, a while, when Beatport first started, and it was just, like, the internet wasn't really used for anything apart from, like, promoting yourself and, like, small, tiny communities that always seemed really positive. Everything was always really positive.
I don't know if you remember, because I started making music when I was like about 13, 14, something like that. I remember having like putting tracks on MySpace. Mm. And I remember like, you know, the idea that there was another producer in Merseyside that made music or another DJ was like, oh my God, there's someone else like me. There's another little nerd somewhere down the road. Do you know what I mean? And like now it's everyone.
It's hard not to meet a DJ.
Yeah, like everyone's a fucking DJ. But like, I remember like back then it was just like, I don't know, maybe it, you know, it wasn't that exposed, but it just felt like such like a nerdy, weird, like niche thing. If you sat in front of your computer and made music, it was kind of like a really, I remember being in school and, you know, bringing like future music and like mix like into school to read and people would just be like, what the fuck are you doing? What? And it was like people were into like World of Warcraft and shit and like being a fucking DJ or a producer was weirder than that.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of like
People would look at you weird and people would be like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah. And it's kind of weird to see like how now it's so the complete opposite thing. You know?
So commercialized.
It's really strange.
But it's pretty amazing that it is because we can earn money.
I know, exactly true. Yeah. I mean, like, I kind of remember coming out of, like, I didn't get any GCSEs. I wasn't, like, I'm not academically smart. I never really worked. I didn't get any GCSEs or anything. And then I kind of remember coming out of school, or like when I was about to leave school, and said to the careers officer, they're like, what do you want to do? And I was like, oh, well, I kind of like make music and I maybe want to go to college and do sound engineering or something like that. I don't know. And they were like, well, we'd either recommend that you get a job, apprenticeship as a plumber, or you try and go and get a job in Asda. So I was like, right, fucking hell. Okay. So I went to try and get a job in Asda. And I got told by Asda that I wasn't qualified enough. And then I tried to go and get a job in Pound Stretcher, got told that I couldn't get a job in there because I wasn't qualified enough. So I was like, right, fuck
wow.
it. I've got to make this shit work then. Because, wow. And I think maybe that has been like a weird, you know, like we were talking about before. It's like, that is like a weird sort of, that kind of like pushes me on because I'm like, I've got nothing to fall back on.
Yeah.
So I've got to be really good at this. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Otherwise I'm fucked. And I'm living back at my mum's.
I agree with that. It's tough because it's like, and also I think it's when you put your mind to something. So like, this isn't an overnight thing. You don't become successful overnight. You don't become Melee overnight, right? It's like, I've got so many friends that are like super academic, like big lawyers, solicitors, like bankers, investors. And I'm just like, I could never do that. Like I would never, like, not the fact that I'd want, like if I'd want to do it, I'd just never be able to do it. Like I'm not clever enough to do shit like that.
Yeah, I hear that. I've got friends that do it as well. And like, I think it's just like, I mean, I suppose like we need to give ourselves a bit of credit because like clearly we run businesses, labels and things like that. Like granted, we have people that help us do it. But I do kind of look at that, like if I ever had to go and get a normal job doing something like that, like, you know, climbing the ladder and, you know, starting off somewhere and getting like this big job in like a corporate world or something like that. I'm just like, I don't know how people do that.
I really respect it. Because it's like, it's something that I like, honestly, like I'd love the idea of like being really successful in corporate world. I love the idea of it. I don't know why, but like, I think it's because I see like a bunch of friends do it and I'm like sick. Like the goal is to like, smash your numbers and earn more money. Like that is literally it. And then you leave your job every day and you're done.
But I suppose you have to be, I think like in that sort of world, you have to be a certain type of person, right? Like I think like, I don't know, like to sort of climb the ladder in that sort of corporate world, like on a big scale, like you have to be somewhat of a dick.
But it, like, let's be honest, is it not the same as the music industry?
Yeah, that's true. I suppose we all have to be somewhat of a dick, do you know what I mean? But like it's, I don't know, man. It's I think like sometimes I think I annoy, like I've had the same manager for 8 years, Sophie. Yeah. She's the best, like she's like my second mum, she's amazing. And but I think sometimes like she's a very driven person. You know, she looks after Chasing Status and like all these sort of big acts as well.
I actually met her not so long ago. The first time. She's wicked.
Yeah, and but I think she kind of gets annoyed with me sometimes. Do you know like billing wars, right? So like you'll be below someone on the lineup and it's just like I kind of like sort of shedded my ego about shit like that a couple of years ago. It doesn't really bother me anymore. Yeah. I'm just happy to be on the party. But I think like I think agents and managers take that stuff to heart a lot more than the artists.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I think it's like ridiculous when you like, it's just like so dumb when you see like a lineup and it's like, it says like A to Z headliners, then there's four of them in the top. And then there's, it's just like, oh my God, it's just like, you just all look so fucking stupid.
It's so cringe.
Who gives a fuck? Yeah. And it's all for like the ego of the fucking, the agent or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Sophie's kind of said to me a few times, she's like, we should push back on this. I'm like, no, just leave it. I'm not bothered. Like, do you know what I mean? And like Sophie, like, she'll cut me saying this, but she like has said to me a few times, well, this is why this DJ is doing this. And you're, and I'm like, cool. I'm good with that. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, maybe that's me being too nice, but I'm like, I'm not asked about like push, like let's fucking stamp on everyone to get to where I want to be. I'm not bothered. And like that, I think that's kind of, you know, longevity, man. Do you know what I mean? I'm sure you're the same.
Like, yeah, like it's really interesting you brought that up. Like I'm playing Space in November, and they did like this, like I played there a bunch of times. And
is that an exclusive?
No, I don't know when this is going to come out. No, it's out.
All right.
But they sent the flyer, and it was like A to Z. And yeah. Then I saw like their like local guy who his name begin like their one of their residents, wicked DJ Andreas Lyons. They put him at the bottom, and I'm like, guys, it's A to Z. Like, put him at the top. Like,
oh my god, no.
So I had literally turned around and said, and we changed it, and I was like, just fucking put him at the top. If it's A to Z, like, we're all the same. Like, we all get our 2-3 hours behind the decks. There's no difference. Yes, like, I don't know, like, we might sell more tickets than him, but so what? Like,
and I would guarantee that 99.999% of the people that go that are buying tickets to go to these parties aren't going, no. Fucking hell, like, what's with the fucking billing on that? Or I don't give a fuck.
No, not at all.
They really don't care. And I think that's like, you know, I think in this sort of industry, you know, ego can take over, man. And I think like you need to be so careful, because I read this, but I don't know if you read this book called like Ego is the Enemy.
No, I haven't.
The fucking best book I've ever read in my life.
I'm going to take a note of it now. Is it an audio book? Do you know?
Yeah, it's an audio book as well. Yeah. And it's honestly, it was just like, because I kind of noticed it was about maybe like a couple of years before COVID that there was a little bit of a sort of, I don't know, I suppose like an ego developing, or like a kind of like a feeling that, right, so in this industry, like, no one's owed shit, right? Yeah. Like, I think it just in life in general, like, none of us are owed shit. Mm-hmm, totally. But I was kind of like noticing my sort of thing being like, well, I've been doing this for a long time. Why aren't I doing this gig? Yeah. Or why aren't I doing that? And I kind of didn't like it. It wasn't me as a person. And anyway, I read this book, and like, as soon as I started like shedding that ego, it's like my career, like, I hate saying that word, but like my career and just like my life just felt so much better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it just freed me up, because I was just like, I was not so bothered about who I was with on a lineup, or, you know, how well a record did. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? I put records out now and I'm just like, fuck it. If I fucking like it, then great. And if it doesn't do what it's meant to do, then it doesn't. And we'll just move on to the next one. Do you know what I mean?
It's a really nice situation to be in with that. I can say that I'm like that partly. Like, when it comes to other people and other artists doing really well, I'm like, that's cool. That's what I want. Like, there's enough space for all of us. When a record comes out and it fucking doesn't do well, it pisses me off so much.
Does it? See, it's like, I don't know if I'm at this point now where I'm like, the last four records that I put out have done really well. I'm kind of like, oh yeah, it's fine. So I'm like, maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll put the next single, I'll put out Bombs, and then I'll go be like, oh, fuck's sake. But do you know, like, you know Bontam, right? Andy,
yeah.
Bontam.
Yeah, yeah.
He's my best friend on planet Earth. I love the guy.
He's the best.
And he's the same. He gets so worked up about it, and I have to talk to him. I have to be like, mate, like, the record is incredible. Like, yeah. It doesn't, and I get it. Like, we're artists and we make, you know, we make sort of music, and, you know, it's our lives, isn't it? Like, you know, you want shit to do well. And especially now, because it's so oversaturated and there's like a need to like have content all the time and music all the time. But I kind of had a, you know, I think, With my sort of music, I signed a publishing deal with Defected a couple of months ago.
Congrats.
I had a chat with them about, you know, they were basically saying to me, you need to put out more music. And I was like, well, every sort of song that I make, I want to take people's heads off with it. Yeah. Like, that's just like, I'm not interested in putting out filler records. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just totally. Not.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, I get it for the content and for the constant, hey, here's a new record. I don't want to do that. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, you can't, go into you can't go into the studio every single week and make, you know, not blowing smoke up my own ass, but that Groove Africa record did really fucking well. And it's like a record that took me 20 minutes to make. But, and like, I remember my manager actually said to me, she was like, "This is a good B-side." And I was like, no. I was like, no, this is the single. And she was like, "What? It doesn't do anything. It just repeats itself." And I was like, yeah, that's the point.
I love manager feedback. It's always the fucking best.
But it's like, you know, and I think, you know, I think, yeah, like I kind of, every single song that I make, I just want to push the envelope with it. And like, you don't make records like that every week. Like, you need to go out and live life, and you need to go and, you know, be in the clubs and stuff like that. And I could never be one of them DJs that's just banging shit out like monthly. And I think that is longevity as well, right? Because it's like, you know, you're kind of doing stuff on your own terms, I suppose.
I don't disagree with you, although I did have a conversation with my manager after this record that we've just put out. And the thing is, the record that we've just put out hasn't flopped. It did really well, apart from on Spotify. Yeah. Like, Spotify just fucking took a piss on it and was like, no. But it's like, I had a conversation with him. I was like, pardon?
It's frustrating.
I think it's frustrating when you get so much positive feedback.
Yeah.
And then like it then doesn't correlate into anything. And like you said, it's our lives. Like we rely on records to do well for us to get booked, for more people to find out who we are, for then us to have a career. And when there's the playlist gods on every platform and radio gods on every station that says no, and you're like, fuck, which is part of the game, right?
It is, but I hate that people like that have an opinion on to say whether my music's good or not. It's like, what the fuck do you know?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? See, I love how I say I don't get annoyed by it, but I clearly
you definitely do.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's like, I hate that. And it's like, do you know, another thing that annoys me as well is like the butchering. Like, you make a record that's 6-7 minutes long, and it's like, right, you need to butcher it to death to 2 minutes 50 or three, just so it might get in a Spotify playlist. It's just like, where are we going with this? Have you seen that Lil Yachty record that came out yesterday? It's 1 minute 20 long. I was like, is that where we're going?
Well, have you seen the Mad Cow playlists?
Nah.
I can't remember if it's called Mad Cow. It used to be called Mad Cow, but I think they've just put it as like, it's called like lo-fi trip hop, and it's the biggest playlist on Spotify, and it's owned by one guy, and the one guy pretty much releases all the music himself, and he's done it so each record's like 30 seconds long. So Spotify hate it because they have to pay a full royalty per 30 seconds, but then you get more plays.
Wow, that's mad.
So like, the shorter the record, the more streams you technically get because people hit replay more.
I rate it, but it's like, are we going to have to start making minute long fucking dance records now?
The thing is, I actually don't think Spotify is the issue for that. I think what I feel is that it's the internet, it's TikTok, it's Instagram, it's all of that that's shortened
the attention span. Yeah, it's gone.
It's shortened the attention span. So it's like, one of my friends I was talking to the other day, and with the Throw Your Soul Down that I've just put out, plug there, go listen to it if you haven't listened to it.
I mean, it's your podcast. Go for it.
No, I'd do it if it was on your podcast as well. No, right? She was like, "Yeah, this is the first record you've released that like the vocals come in straight away. It's usually 5-10 seconds of beats." And I'm like, maybe this is how general public look at it, and they're like, "Why is there beats?" Because they don't understand the culture. But then going back to what you were saying about these kind of people, like 10 people at the top that kind of choose our music, the thing that, like, obviously, like, I really respect what they do as jobs, but I think it must be so hard because we're releasing club music, and you have to listen to how this sounds in a club, and. I personally, the opinion should be made on how it sounds in a club. We're not making radio records. Like, we're lucky that in the UK that these records sometimes do cross over. But realistically, they're made for the club. Go listen to the go partying. Go see all these DJs. Go listen to what does well in the clubs and see, because there's no correlation now. There's no correlation with a record doing well on radio doesn't mean that it's going to do well on Spotify or YouTube or streaming anyway. A record that does well on streaming doesn't mean that it's going to get radio, and a record that does well on radio and streaming doesn't mean that everyone's DJ playing it, and it doesn't mean it's doing well. And then it also, none of that correlates to if people are buying tickets.
Oh, mate, tell me about it. Jesus Christ. Like, it's like, I think in general, it's at the moment, especially in the UK, it's really, I don't know, it's just, it feels really hard to sell tickets. I think like post-COVID, it's just been like really strange. It's like when we do the Club Bad Party in Liverpool, and we only do it in like a 300-400 cap venue, but like, we used to fucking fly 250 tickets in the first week.
Yeah.
And now everyone buys tickets so late. I've been freaking out that we've got it. I've got the first one on Saturday, and I'm like, I mean, it's done fine, but I know it'll sell out. It'll sell out on the day. Mm. We did the birthday party this year. Like the biggest one we've ever done, like a 2,000 capacity venue.
Wow.
And a couple of days before, it had done 600 tickets. So we were flapping. We were like, fuck, like, what are we going to do? It was me and Eat Everything. And we were like, oh my God. And on the day, we fucking sold it out. Yeah. Fucking came down the road. Mm. And I was just like, is this kind of like what it is now? Are people just like, I don't know if people sort of, you know, habits of like buying tickets since COVID have changed. But also, I mean, I'm sure this has been discussed a lot on this sort of podcast, but I think like, you know, there's kind of a new generation of kids between like that have been going to uni, like 18 to 20. I don't know. I've never went to uni. Once the age. Anyway, but they've missed that whole, they've missed that whole thing. Like that whole going out thing. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Like that them kind of really formative sort of club nights that you go to where you find like the taste, your taste and like what you're really into. They kind of miss that entire thing. So I think it's going to take like a really long time for it to kind of come back round to.
I don't think pre-sales are going to come back personally. I think it's just a market that we all have to, unless you're like massive, like Chris Lake or something like that, where you're selling fucking 20,000 tickets at a go. But like, I think it's very different for the markets that are like where you have a follower, you have a fan base, but they're not like super like, oh my God, I have to see this weekend. Because I think what everyone wants to do is wait till see what their mates are doing. And then you have two mates that want to go to Club Bad, and then they tell all their mates, and it's like, okay, 20 people are coming now.
Yeah. But you know, the thing that annoys me about it though, and it happens every single time, it's like I'll be on Instagram every day like, hey guys, tickets are running low.
Yeah.
But not. Oh fuck, I just revealed the secret. But then like it'll sell out on the day or something. And then people are just like, hey, can I get some guest list? And I'm like, you fucking buy the tickets on
it's so funny. Talking about that, I won't disclose where I played, but the like 2 hours before the club opened, they were like sold out. Okay. I'm like, sweet, whatever. I knew deep down inside, this is bullshit. Like absolute bullshit. This is in a rural town in the UK. Like no way I sold this out. Like at all. I got to the club and there was literally like 20 people there.
So why did this? What?
I know.
What the fuck? Why?
and then they did an after movie.
Oh no. Did they do it like, did they get like the angles right so it made like there was made it look like there was loads of people in there?
Oh, yeah. And I'm sorry if the person's listening that booked me. I love you. You're a homie, but still, don't do that.
Don't do that ever again. Fucking hell, man. But it's like, I don't know. I mean, I haven't been doing.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Like, I used to be sort of doing every little town in the fucking UK for years, like Nottingham, Sheffield, Bristol, yeah. Like all that. Like, I don't know. I haven't really been playing that often. I've been doing a lot in America and stuff. And I kind of like, are you still living in America?
I'm in the UK at the moment, but I still have my place out there.
Yeah. I've really loved going out there this year. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I think in the UK, it's like, you know, I've been such a sort of DJ that's just been around for 10 years on every fucking lineup because I can't say no to fucking things. But I kind of like going to America. It just seems like there's like new energy. It's like, it's just fresh. I'm just like kind of new to people-ish over there. Do you know what I mean? And it's just, I don't know. I've kind of like quite enjoyed just doing some different shit. I'm like, you know, I'm playing in Kenya on New Year's Eve this year, which is wild. Like, usually it'd be like, you know, like a twos up doing Warehouse Project and fucking Motion or something like that. And I kind of did that for years. So it's kind of like, you know, it's nice to be able to like start switching it up and doing some different shit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. How is your African market? Because like your music is very organic, and I don't want to say you're an Afro house artist, because I don't think you are personally. No. Especially being the whitest dude from Liverpool, it just doesn't go hand in hand.
Hey, well, I'll come on to the Africa thing, but I think like I kind of struggle with that. I've always been like super I have to be super respectful about, you know, what I sort of sample and what, you know, I've always made sure that, I just need to be super respectful with it, because, you know, I kind of get sent demos all the time, and it's just, I was just like, maybe people think my music's as obvious as, I don't know, but like, you know, getting a fucking record with like a bongo and an African loop and just a kick drum slapped on it, and it's called something that's kind of like just a bit weird for a white kid to call a record. It's just like, you know, I get sent them all the time, and I'm just like, oh, you kind of just got to kind of like nuance it a bit better than that. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I have been in places, like I remember playing in Colombia a few years ago, and I had this record called Conga Mode, which was like, had the most gibberish lyrics in it. Like, I got like my label manager, like his wife is like South American, and we kind of like got her to go through the lyrics and stuff like that. And even she was just like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, it's absolutely just gibberish. I remember playing in Colombia a few years ago, and like some kid came up to me and he was like, so like all these records you make, do you know what the lyrics say? And I was like, I was like, I try to as best I can. And like, he kind of grilled me about it. And I was like, do you know what? Like, I don't ever want to be in this like point in my career where you're like quote unquote culture vulture or whatever like that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I come from like, I mean, I suppose like all the music that I've ever been involved in is black music. It's like hip hop was like my sort of first love. And then, you know, I suppose, you know, house and techno are as well. And like, you know, Latin America and sort of South African music, it's like I've always feel like that I am a guest in this,
totally,
what I'm doing, you know what I mean? Because
we all are, right?
Yeah, we all are, of course. And it's like, and but I think, you know, like, I just have to be super careful about it. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's going to be the first time I've ever been to Africa. So I'm playing South Africa with Shimza. So I've been kind of doing some work with Shimza, and I did a remix for him. And then going to Kenya. But I just like this Amapiano thing is just really like, it's just, it kind of like reminds me of here. They're like Amapiano, like this new sort of like, it's kind of like Afro, it's kind of like the Afro house stuff, but it's like 115 BPM. It's so slowed down, and it's like the bass in it is like, it kind of reminds me of hearing like grime for the first time. It just feels like so like out there, you know what I mean? And it's so exciting. And I think like, you know, I think I'm sure you're the same. It's like when you've been doing this for a long time, you kind of need to keep on your toes and finding new influences and kind of just keeping it fresh. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be good. I've just, you know, I kind of just, I think like when people meet me and know and see me DJ, and I think people can hear that, you know, I try and be as authentic as possible, you know? Like I collect, like I'm a big sort of record collector and stuff. And I think it is like coming from that hip hop background. It's like, without being fucking cheesy, but it's just like, it's all about keeping it real and all that sort of shit. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I think that's like, I never ever want to lose that. Do you know what I mean?
How did the whole hip hop thing start for you? Because the hip hop that you kind of always talk about, like, I know we grew up in the 90s listening to it, but it's still like, you like fully embrace that.
Yeah, well, I think it was, it was Dr. Dre 2001, which was like the album. And then I kind of got into like DJ Premier and Gangstar and stuff like that. And I just remember listening to like Above the Clouds by Gangstar and being like, fucking hell, like, what? This is just like, this is just amazing. And then hearing like Protect Your Neck for the first time by Wu-Tang Clan. And it's just like, I was thinking about Wu-Tang Clan the other day, and it's just like, all right, I mean, I've got, got Wu-Tang tattoo there, but I was like, imagine like creating a group of 9 to 10 people and every single one of them is a fucking star in their own right. That will never ever 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 happen again.
No,
do you know what I mean? Like they're all completely different sort of artists and people, and it was just like, that's amazing. But I think like I remember so my uncle, who kind of got me into dance music, was always, and producing actually, and he was, he would always be trying to play me like Global Underground, like Sasha and James Lavelle and all these type of things. And I was just like, I don't get it. This is shit. I don't understand. I was just like, this is just, no, I was just like, where's the fucking Dilla records? I was just like, where's the, do you know what I mean? I was like, no, I just don't understand it. And then he took me to see, I don't know, he played me a record by The Prodigy called Diesel Power, which had Kool Keith on it. It's just like, I just remember hearing that record for the first time and being like, oh my God, like this is, I think he knew that, he was like, right, he's a hip hop kid. This is how I'm going to get him into like electronic stuff. Because it's kind of like the same thing. And like this record just like knocked my head off, man. I was like, this is fucking unbelievable. And I kind of got obsessed with The Prodigy and all that sort of shit. And he taught me to see The Prodigy when I was like 14. And I was just like, that was just it.
Game on.
And I remember it was the Audio Bullies.
Mm.
So they were supporting The Prodigy, the DJ. And that was the first time I heard like Switch, a bit patchy.
Yeah. Such a good era of music, like the blog, almost like the Bloghouse days. The like, it was
amazing.
It was like the punk of electronic music.
Yeah, it was so like, I was with Heidi the other night and she played This Is Sick by Switch.
Yeah,
and I was just like, oh my God, this is just so like ridiculous and amazing. But I think like that was the moment when it sort of clicked for me, and I was like, ah, okay, like I kind of like dance music now. You know what I mean? And then I remember getting like a copy. My uncle was always making music, and he got me a copy of Reason or something like that. And then I just started making tunes from there, and then. But yeah, it was just weird how I like just I completely detested dance music. I was like, ugh, this is fucking disgusting. And now it's my life. Like, what the fuck? Just weird how shit like that happens, man.
Do you make hip-hop beats?
I've started to get back into it. I bought an MPC again. Sick. And I've started to get back into it because, you know, like, the music that kind of, like, I don't really listen to dance music that much.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of like what keeps it fresh and kind of keeps the sets fresh as well, because it's like, you know, if I was listening to fucking, you know, there's a lot of fucking DJs that I like, but if I was listening to, like, you know, people that I'm doing lineups with constantly, you just sort of end up sounding like them, and it's just like, I don't want to do that.
Right. But I think also there's so, like, you have such a unique sound, like, as Melee, and I think there's not many people in this industry that are like that, and, like, it's so important to keep that.
Yeah, and I think I kind of never want to lose that, and that goes back to what I was saying before about just banging fucking records out. I was banging shit out every single week. It's just like, you just kind of dilute what you're about. But I think, like, at the moment, like, the music that sort of really turns me on is, like, you know, the sort of new sort of neo-soul, R&B, soul, hip-hop crossover stuff, you know, like Salt and Children of Zeus and things like that. And, like, I kind of, like, I listen to these records, I'm like, oh, I want a bit of that, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I kind of want to get back into doing it, but it's just, I suppose it's just, like, it's finding the time to, like, commit to, like, a complete other project when you're, like, so busy doing this shit.
It's tough, isn't it? I'm like, super into Silk Sonic. I always forget their actual fully name. Anderson .Paak and Bruno Mars.
Oh, so good.
And I'm just like, this is, like, modern day Motown that we're just, like, people have tried to do it for the last 40 years and they failed. And now they are nailing it so well.
Anderson .Paak, I think, is, like, one of the best artists of, like, our generation. Agreed. I think that fucking guy is, like, I don't think people, like, I know people do appreciate him, but I don't think he's fully appreciated of how fucking good that guy is.
I agree. But I also think that's really fucking cool. Because he's like, he's still able to kind of be underneath everything. It's kind of like, for me, in our scene, it's almost, it won't be for a while, for much longer, but, like, the kind of music guys, like And Me, Ramper.
Yeah.
Like, for me, like, what they're doing at this moment in time, I absolutely love.
Yeah, they're amazing.
But it's also like, they've been doing it for so long, and it's only now that they're kind of getting the recognition. And, like, you see them change. You see, like, how, like, these, like, really geeky German dudes just, like, have completely changed, and then they're fucking producing Drake's album. And you're like, Jesus Christ, it's weird.
I've seen Ami play. I went to Black because I've done a lot of shows in IB for this year. Like, fucking, it got to the point right where I was like, in April, May, I was like, IB there, woo! And now, like, I did my last gig last weekend, and I was like, get me the fuck off this. I was like, fuck this place. But I've been kind of hanging around there a lot, and I went to see Ami at Black Coffee's night. And it was incredible. Like, his set was incredible. But it was just like, the setting was so weird. It was like, there was like tables like next to the booth. And like, people were just like, oh yeah, they're like 70 grand for the night or something. But then you've got Ami playing like the maddest fucking off its head, deep sort of like tribal shit. And I was like, wow, there's like, the juxtaposition here is wild.
I know. I had breakfast with Chrissy, who's Black Coffee's manager, the other day. And she was telling me some of the stories there that, and you're just like, it's amazing what he's done. Like, it's actually truly amazing what he's done and what they have done as a team.
Yeah, it's incredible. Like,
create a very high-end culture out of dance music, because it was never there before. It was always like, get your fucking pills and go sweat in the dance floor, and no one gives a fuck, but like, no cameras, like, I don't want to be seen, I'm going to escape. Yeah. It's just changed. It's flipped on the side. I guess the Afterlife guys are the same. It's like, they've Funeral House. It's kind of like, just got to a point where they're so famous in this genre that, like, there's a huge wealth kind of, it, like, you know, if you're going to one of these parties, it's full of wealthy people.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the three times that I've been to Black Coffee this year, I've seen Vinicius Junior, the Real Madrid striker.
Yeah.
Who scored the goal against Liverpool in the Champions League final.
So did you hate him? Like,
yeah, I didn't want to speak to that guy. Not like he wanted to speak to me. But like, we kind of got introduced and it was just like, oh, yeah, cool, man. But it's like, that's what I mean. Like the amount of people like that you see in there. Yeah. Like big sort of really welcome people. But what I will say, and this might be my OCD kicking in, so I went the other night to Glitterbox Clothing and the Glitterbox Defected guys had bought like one of the tables at High. Mm. It was like a big booth. I'll send you the picture later. But there was all like glass going around it, right? And I was standing there and I was like, they were like, these are like 20-30 grand for the night, these tables. And they couldn't even bother to line the glass up that went round. It was like this, like every single one. And I was going around showing everyone, you fucking see this? It's 30 fucking grand and you can't even line the glass up. It really annoyed me. I don't know, there was something about it. It was like, I was just like, maybe that's just my weird, anxious OCD kicking in.
No, but I think that just goes to show, doesn't it, really? Like, what VIP booths are about is, like, you can literally buy a bottle of vodka for 700 euros that literally costs 50 quid down the street, and you're like, oh, guys, like, come on.
It's crazy, man. And, like, I kind of had, like, there was, I don't know, I've never done, like, the table service, bottle service is not really my, it's not,
no.
I don't really like it. But like I was, you know, there was people coming up to me asking me if I wanted a massage. I was like, you what? I'm in a fucking club. I was like, no, I don't want a fucking massage. And then it was like, I don't know, I have like a weird thing. Like, so I went to like get the bottle of, they had like this massive bottle of vodka with lights in it and all that. And I was like, fucking hell. And I went to like pour my own drinks. I was like, I just want to make my own drink. And they were like, no, we'll make it for you. I was like, I don't want to make my own drink. I'm a grown man. Do you know what I mean? So it's like that sort of stuff. And,
I think it's a different culture that we didn't grow up with.
Totally.
Really? Yeah. Because I think like a lot of people like crave to have the booth, the like VIP thing and just to show on Instagram. Really, yeah. It's not about anything else.
Isn't that crazy in itself?
Yeah.
Like, I think that's the point that we're at now, where it's like, right, I'll pay 30 grand for this just to, like, put it on Instagram. Mm. And, like, to be honest, I had a fucking brilliant night, but it wasn't worth fucking 30 grand. I mean, I didn't pay for it. But it was like, I wouldn't pay 30 grand for this.
Is any night worth 30 grand, let's be honest?
No. No night on planet Earth is worth 30 grand.
Exactly. But I guess the thing is, the people that are paying for these things, like, it's a bit of change.
Of course. I mean, you'd fucking hope so.
I hope so, yeah. I really hope so. Because if it's not, then you're fucking stupid. Stop doing it, people. Let's talk about Club Bad.
Yep.
I fucking love the branding on Club Bad. It's really fucking solid. And it's like out there and doesn't really kind of fit with any other record label, which I like. Let's talk about, I want to know everything about it because I'm just kind of jealous that you've started it.
So it was kind of I think it's been going about, when did that night five record, I reckon it's been going about 5 years now, but we kind of had this idea that we wanted to, like, that I wanted to start a party and a record label, and I think I couldn't think of a name. Like, I couldn't think of a name for ages. And, you know, I had multiple meetings with my managers and it was like, oh, it's got to have something to do with rhythm and how, like, your music sounds and da-da-da. And we went through, like, a million names and just nothing sort of clicked. So Club Bad was actually meant to be started about six months before it did, but I just couldn't fucking think of a name. So I'm like, you're going to have to wait. So, but then I was listening to I played the Danny Tenaglia remix of Green Velvet Flash. And it said, I was playing it at a fucking rave and it said, oh, welcome to Club Bad. And I was like, that's it. Fucking having that. I was like, that's it. I was like, that is it. And like, I suppose, like, so once I sort of had the name, you know, I kind of just wanted something that was going to reflect, one, my sort of personality, two, the music that I sort of like playing, which is sort of like quite sort of all over the place and sort of out there. And then I kind of, yeah, I kind of always, I like the kind of like stamp, like tattoo, yeah, like, do you know, like traditional tattoo sort of vibe. I kind of like, I've kind of always liked that, like the Panthers and the kind of the Cobra sort of things, yeah, and all that. So we got introduced to a guy called Joel Burden. So I've got to big up Joel. Like, the, he is the guy that does all this stuff. He's out of Doncaster. And sort of like really like Joel's art. And yeah, I kind of just went to Joel and was just like, right, this is kind of what I want to do. This is my kind of idea for it. I kind of like want it to be like, everything to be like an animal, or like every, so all the club nights will always be like one sort of animal, yeah, and then like so he kind of, but Joel kind of came up with like the record label artwork with the squares and all that sort of shit. So it's kind of like, it's been, and obviously he designs between me, him, and Jake from Unique Clothing. We design the clothes together. So it's always kind of like, I kind of like working with people where you love what they do so much that you just trust them to get on with it.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not too much of a like controlling, like micromanagement person. I'm just like, to Joel, I'm just like, here's what I'm thinking. Just go and do it. Because I know he's going to smash it. You know what I mean? And like, that just makes like, one, their life so much easier.
Yeah.
And two, I think that just kind of, that will just create the sort of, the best sort of product, I suppose.
And the most authentic is kind of, it just feels so real. And everything you like put out branding wise, it looks fucking great.
Thank
like
you, man.
Not talking about even the sound of the records and everything like that, but it's, I don't like saying it, but brand is everything in this industry, in life, not just everything, in life is brand.
Like, yeah.
Like the reason, like, just look at Apple, for example, look at Moog, for like, it's just brand is everything. And I think when you have a solid brand, it kind of just pushes through. Look at Afterlife, for example, like that.
I just wanted it to be like so recognizable. And not, you know, I kind of, maybe it's a detriment to myself sometimes, but like, I kind of like, I'm so obsessed with not doing anything like anyone else. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I suppose that's, and I feel like that's how it should be. And I think like, that's the thing we want to do with Club Bad. It's just like, we've got our like kind of look and everything now. And like, that's like, our sort of identity with it. But it's good. It
takes time, you know, doesn't it, as well, right? It takes time to kind of to grow that and kind of really like work out what it is for you and
I see a lot of sort of DJs like starting labels, and like, more power to them. I'm not saying anything bad about it, but like, sometimes it can feel a little bit like rushed.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, I've just thought of this name like yesterday, like, let's just do it.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it's like, I don't know, if you like want like a lasting thing, it needs to have, people need to be able to sort of identify with it, I suppose. I fucking meet kids and fucking, you know, this kid, I met this kid in Dallas a few weeks ago, and he had every single shirt, every single Club Bad shirt. And I was just like, I didn't even know we fucking were selling shit to Dallas. I remember doing, like, this girl came up to me in South Korea who had a Club Bad t-shirt on. You know, there's people in Miami and fucking LA with Club Bad tattoos. And I think, like, I always said to my management when we were sort of creating it, I was like, I don't want it to be so much that it's Melee's Club Bad.
Yeah.
I want Club Bad to be able to, like, stand on its own. Do you know what I mean? And, like, it to be its own thing, because it's, like, it's not a fucking vanity project. It's like, something, like, I want it to be, like, its own sort of brand standing on its own, you know?
I think it's also so important to have that, because there's a lot of brands that rely purely on the head guy or the head girl, and I think that actually devalues it in the long term of things, because like Hot Creations for me is a class, is an amazing example, where like Jamie obviously runs it with Lee, and but like, it's really not a Jamie Jones thing now, it's the artist thing.
Yeah,
and Jamie started Paradise, and that's a Jamie thing. And yeah. And I think that's the really special thing, is like, if you can create something that, yes, it's associated with you, but it doesn't have to have you. It's genius.
Yeah, and I think we always kind of looked at Paradise and sort of, you know, I suppose Elro in a way. I think like Elro, because when I started Club Bad, I was doing like a lot. It was when I was doing the residency for Elro, and maybe that rubbed off on it a little bit. Mm. Just like that kind of like vibrant sort of, you know, it's just a bit of fun, man.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's just like, I am playing fun music, and I do play some fucking cheesy shit sometimes, and it's just like, fuck it. I'm not taking myself seriously, you know?
Yeah, it would be a bit weird if your branding was like super like dark and techno-y and like just taking this. Just wouldn't work. Like,
what? But I think like what we're going to start doing with the party now is we're going to start doing like special nights. So I'm going to do a party. We're trying to figure it out at the moment, but I'm going to do a party where we don't play house. And I'm going to play the shit that I played on Boiler Room when I was a kid, like grime and fucking garage and trap and like all this sort of weird shit that I was playing back then. And we're just going to do a party like that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get like maybe One Man or Tash LC and all these people to come play that are, like, kind of fit that vibe. And then I wanted to do like, you know, a Club Bad techno party where I do like a 2-hour techno set, and then I have Mark Broom or Effie people like that come and play. So I think like it's like we're just always trying to like think of how to like push it forward. And it's like the label as well. It's like you know. I'm really glad I've got a really good label manager, Graham, because I would not be able to fucking run that label on my own.
Graham Sahara?
Yeah.
He's a G, man. I love him.
But if it was up to me, that fucking label would still be on release 3. I get fuck all done, man. But it's good. Like, some of the records that we've put out have been, like, some of my favourite dance records for fucking, you know, Lebelski, fucking incredible, insanely underrated producer.
Yeah, he's great.
And I think like you know, it's good, man. It's like, you know, like people are I'm kind of getting sent music from producers that I really like that are sort of tailoring it to Club Bad. So we had like Koyu Hassler do a couple of things. Little Fritter's just done like this tribal techno thing that's coming out in a couple of months. And it's good. Like, that's the point that I want to be on. I want producers to like sort of like level it up and like, you know, like if a label's got a certain sound, which I think we have, then, you know, it's fun for producers just to be like, it's quite a challenge to be like, right, I want to record.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think that kind of got lost as well for a certain amount of time, because it's like, especially the tech house craze, like everyone was just releasing the same records. And still, to that point, it's like...
It feels like that with the minimal thing now.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just like, there was no... I don't know, it's so hard for these scenes to sort of like... Obviously, I'm not... They're fucking massive sort of scenes. Mm. Like, people love them, but I don't know how sustainable it is. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, how many times do we need to hear fucking Fergalicious on a bro, it's like, come on, man. Like,
well, it's like Bucket Hats, mate. Bucket Hats used to be Bucket Hats used to be fashionable in the early 2000s.
Like, look, oh, fucking hell. Mate. Do you know what? I've got this thing now. Like, it's like, I've just, there's too many fucking Bucket Hats on hats now. I need to calm down.
Can't wear a Bucket Hat. I look so stupid.
I actually cannot imagine you wearing a Bucket
Hat. I literally look like I've gone fishing. It's stupid.
I mean, isn't that the point?
That is the point. But I think the fact that I have a beard and look like an Amish man, it just doesn't...
Oh, shit. Yeah. If you combined it with, like, the yellow coat as
it
well...
It does not. That's my album cover.
That's hard. That is actually hard.
Yeah, it's going to be called Gone Fishing as well. Yeah, man. I want to talk about that Boiler Room. And your old stuff. I didn't know that. I didn't know any of this. So tell me about it.
So when I was like 19, I just like moved down to London, basically. So I was like, I wasn't making house music at all. I was making don't know what you'd call it. It was kind of like in that kind of era of 2010-11 where everyone was kind of making quote-unquote bass music, and it was kind of this really exciting time when, remember, like, Joyo was first coming through, and sort of around that time, post-dubstep, I suppose it was called. I kind of, like, moved down to London, and I just used to go to parties and just fucking annoy people. Like, I remember just going to parties to meet, because I knew that, like, Annie Mac and, like, Toddler T and all these sort of people would be there, and I'd just be like, hey, guys, did you listen to my demo? And, like, do you know what I mean? And it was like, is this fucking, like, Scouse kid just turning up to all these parties?
Typical Scouse.
Yeah. Just, like, finding a way in. And, yeah, and, like, all these people became my friends, and I was going out with a girl down there. So I was going out with Monkey, the DJ Monkey.
Really? I did not know that.
We went out from when we were like 19. We went out for a long time. So I kind of, me and Luce lived down there. And it was kind of the same time. She was on Rinse FM at the same time. It was great. And I just started like making music. And it was kind of around the same time that Rusty sort of Hood Mode sort of stuff came out. And I started making some things like that. And, like, my manager at the time, Rada, who's still one of my best friends, she went on to manage Skepta and Twigs. She manages Twigs now, Mahalia and people like that. So she was amazing, but she was my first ever manager. And she was just like, well, we should just get a rapper on these beats then. And I was like, well, who? She was like, who do you want on it? And my favourite rapper of all UK was Kano. I was just like, that was, like, my ultimate.
Yeah.
I was like, well, let's try and get Kano on it then. Anyway, ended up, like, long story short, Kano agreed to do it. And I was like this 19-year-old child going into studio with one of my heroes. I did not have a clue how to fucking engineer anything like that. I had to get a friend to come and do it. And yeah, I mean, me and Kano are like mates, really good mates this day. But I ended up doing a lot of work with Kano around that time. I produced like 4 records with him. I did a record for his album Made in the Manor, which I just literally got my first gold disc for a couple of weeks ago, which is fucking mad. So I was doing like Boiler Room, and like, I think it's so weird like looking at it now, because it's like I look complete, I mean, obviously it was like 11 years ago, but it was kind of just like this weird time where it was just, you know, you know when you're like so young that you don't really care what other people think, you don't really know what you're playing is completely fucking wrong, because you've got no sort of, you've got nothing to sort of compare it to, because you don't really care or know. And like that Boiler Room, it's like, it's the weirdest shit. I'm playing some tribal records, I play Robin S. Show Me Love, I play Prince, I play Rusty, I play Daniel Bedingfield, I play Pulse X, like all like this. Wow. So it's so all over the place. But I think like that was like such a fucking era, that time where it was just like, that's what you just fucking did.
I bet it went off.
Yeah, it was great. And like, mate, but I had like some amazing shows around that time. And, you know, it was like, I loved that time living in London and hanging around with all these people. It's like, it was kind of like the foundation for my life and career, really. But it was, I kind of remember being on stage at like, I mean, going back, I played, after I did the Boiler Room, I got an offer to play Sonar in Barcelona. Mm. And I was like, oh, I'll just be on like one of the little stages. It'll be fine. And I gets there and the fucking Pet Shop Boys are on. And I'm like, what, like, I'm not doing this, am I? And they're like, yeah, you're going on after the Pet Shop Boys. I was like, you fucking what? There's 15,000 people in a room. I am a child, an actual fucking child. And I like, literally, I remember like getting like wheeled on stage, this little foot about the size of this fucking table, and standing in front of 15,000 people in Barcelona. And I'm a fucking kid. And it was just like, I didn't know, like, I just played, like, the same sort of shit that I was on Boiler Room. It was just like, what the fuck? I remember, like, looking up at, like, to, like, the top right, and there was, like, I was getting, like, filmed by a camera, and I was on a fucking massive screen like that, and it was about fucking the size of a fucking house. There was, like, my face on it, and I was just kind of going,
all right, mate.
What the fuck? But it was kind of like, I was speaking to someone the other day about it, and it was like, I was so sort of young and going a million miles an hour at that time. I can't really remember anything from back then. I wish I would have took, and I wish I would have took more pictures and things like that. And I think maybe I was taking a bit of MDMA at the time. Kind of my memory. Don't do it anymore, obviously. But like, I was kind of like, I was just a party, man. It was fucking, I had the best fun, but I don't really remember it. And yes, but it was like, I kind of remember playing a festival. Was like, I used to play festival like every year, the Bollywood 10. And I remember playing festival, it would have been 2015. And I was playing all this sort of like grimy shit. And I remember it was like playing in this fucking amazing room to like 3,000 people, this tent, the festival, and it was fucking going off. I remember playing like this one tune and watching 3,000 people fucking go off. And I just had like this thing coming to my mind and I was just like, I just don't like this. I just hated it. The music wasn't doing anything for me anymore. I could do it with my fucking eyes closed. Yeah. It just got way too fucking. And I was like, right, I kind of either need to carry on doing this for the rest of my life and just being like bass DJ party guy for the rest of my life, which would have been a piece of piss, or I can like actually challenge myself and do something that I really want to do. And like around that time, that was when I really started to get into like Masters at Work and, you know, like a lot of that sort of like percussive stuff. So I was like, do you know what? Like, I was like, this is kind of what I want. This is what I want the new sort of thing of melee to be about. Yeah. So then that's when I kind of went and made the record called Ambience. And that was the kind of like that, the kind of second phase of my career then.
How was that taken though? Like when you first released Ambience, like how was that as like, you're known as a grime bass, whatever artist, as we called it then, to then, okay, I'm now making.
I kind of said to my manager at the time, my agent, I was just like, try not to put, I think it was like, it would have been end of the summer. And I kind of remember saying until like November, December, just don't put me on anything. Like I kind of like earned a bit of money from the summer. And I was like, I'll do a couple here and there, but I really want to be taken seriously in doing this. You know what I mean? And then, so we did Ambience and that did really well. And then the one that I did after that was a record on Eats Everything's label called Scouse Africa.
Yeah.
And then that was the kind of record that people were just like, all right, okay, he's like kind of serious about it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it's going back to that authenticity thing. Like I want, you know, you need to show people that
and I'm just
not deciding overnight, oh, I want to make house now I'm bored of this. Do you know what I mean? It's like, this was something that I really, you know, clearly it's music I still really care about because it's like, it's still my career and my life now.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, this would have been 7-8 years ago now, which I kind of sort of made that decision. And it was kind of scary. I remember having a lot of sort of conversations with Lucy about it and just being like, what if this doesn't happen? And what if this just kind of goes to shit? And what if people don't sort of respect it or like, do you know what I mean? It is sort of terrifying, like completely changing your career like that.
It's amazing what we do as artists though. And I hate saying that because it sounds fucking
but it makes sense, but it is, come on.
It is. But it's like, it's amazing what we would do just to be happy with the music that we make, right? And it's like, we will literally give up a career to change completely to make something that we like.
Yeah. And I think, like, I'm sure you're the same. It's like, I have, I've never done anything. Maybe that's a lie. But the majority of things that I do in this sort of thing have never been for money. Like, it's not. Like, I kind of, like honestly, and, like, this is kind of a bit stupid, and, like, my manager and my accountant probably get annoyed at me, but, like, I don't really look at how much I earn for gigs. Like, I know I kind of ish what I'm getting, and I just go and get it, and then you get paid at the end of the month, and then that's and you're like, oh, right, okay. But I think, like, it doesn't really bother me that much. It's just like, it sounds a bit cliche, but you do it for the love, innit? Do you know what I mean?
That's interesting, because I wouldn't say I'm like that. Like, really? definitely, like, I'm a bit OCD with kind of finances, where it's like, okay, so we did this on this show and they want us again. Well, we should be getting this on this show.
Right. Yeah.
And like, I have like, this is so stupid. I have like Excel spreadsheets of like all my all my last touring, I could literally go back to like 2019 with all my touring on like how much I earn on every show and everything. But that's,
I'm definitely not like that, bro. I'm so like, I've got a lot better with it. I have got a lot better with it, I promise. But I'm terrible.
Really?
Terrible. So bad.
In what sense? Like you, spending or just...
Yeah, spending, just sort of not saving. Like I've never bought a place. I'm still like renting. I've been renting for 10 years.
Mate, come on, buy a place. You live in Liverpool.
I know, bro. I know. That's what I've been kind of looking at, like, is buying a new place. Like I buying my first place.
Yeah.
But it's just I think it was like in COVID, I got in like loads of debt and shit like that. So it's been like this whole summer's been like getting
catching
back
up. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? And like now I'm like good. I'm like, right, I can start saving properly again.
It's tough, but isn't it? It's really tough. The one thing for me that always kind of, I think it was my old manager who like, it's probably the best thing she ever said to me. And it was like, there's so many DJs that make house music that can't even afford their own house. And I was like,
me.
But it's like, I know you could.
Yeah.
But it's just also about like, it's kind of a weird thing. There's probably going to be somebody listening going, oh, what a fucking bunch of wankers. Like, I bought a house in Detroit. Like, Detroit is like fucking, it's cheap as fuck out there. But it's still like, it's still.
Did you buy somewhere in the UK as well?
No. Oh, yeah. No. I'm lucky with my place in the UK. My parents have like an old farm. So I live in one of the barns in the, in the cow shed. But like, I think it's just like, it's so important. It's so weird and to kind of think about this on a business side of things, because it's like we do it because we love it. And like, yeah, you're right. Like the fact that we're getting paid to do shows is unreal. But it goes back to what we said at the beginning, is when's this going to end? And it's like, I don't know when this is going to end. So like, I have to try and like work out, like, hopefully I do this for the rest of my life.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you never know. So it's like, I try and get to a point where like financially it kind of helps. I'm, don't get me wrong, I'm still very far off from where it needs to be.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
I think it's like, I look up to like certain artists and mates, like I'm sure you're friends with them as well, and they're earning extremely good money. And you're like, okay, like what do we have to do to get to that point so that life's comfortable enough for the rest of our lives?
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I played with Calvin in the summer, and like obviously he's on another level, and I will never get to that level. Like, let's be honest.
Crazy. Yeah. Facts.
But you look at that and you look, okay, like a small percentage of that, like will comfortably allow you to live a life for the rest of your life and allow your loved ones to live a life.
Yeah. And, I mean, that's the dream, isn't it? And I think like, I am very, you know, I'm still, I suppose I'm a little bit immature still. And it probably always will be, but it's like, you know, it's getting to that, you get to that point where you're like 30 and you're just like, right, I need to fucking get my shit together now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't just be fucking, like, I went into a shop yesterday, yeah, and there was like a mint condition Sega Mega Drive, right? And fucking...
Did you buy it?
No, oh. No. But like, what I'm saying is, like, 2 years ago, I would have bought it. And I never would have fucking played it.
Yeah,
I just like, but like, oh man, I can't show you. But like, I've got my thing that I spend the most money on is like records.
Mm.
So like, hold on, I'll get this right. For example, right, I went Actually, where was it? No, it was in Seattle. So this is like Supreme Clientele by Ghostface Killah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is one of my favorite albums, but it's $75. Did I need to buy that? Probably not. You know what I mean? And it's just like, I think that's like my thing where it's just like, it's records and fucking clothes and, you know, it's just the kind of shit I like, man. But I just, you know, I need
it's tough. It's really tough, isn't it? Because it's like, we earn good money. Like, yeah. Realistically, we earn good money and like, we're super fortunate that we earn good money. But I think there's that, like, you can become part of your lifestyle and your lifestyle, like, we live within our lifestyle. It's just like everybody, right? Like you earn $2,000 a month. You probably spend $2,000 a month. You earn $20,000 a month. You're probably going to be spending $30,000 a month because you know another $20,000's coming in the next month.
Of course. I kind of like, my manager said to me yesterday, she was like, Chrissy, like, why are you fucking spending so much money on flights? And I was like, what do you mean? And like, there was all these things. And I was just like, it was like, it's bad, but it was like, change flights for my Ibiza when I've just decided to stay for a fucking week and just stuff like that. And it's just like, come on, man, like, just go home and just like, just go home and fucking save it down.
Go home and make some music. One of my mates that you actually know as well and recently did some work on, I don't want to say it too much, but he used to, before he was sober, he used to miss flights all the time, like miss flights, and
don't throw them under the bus.
Yeah. Woke up one morning in like Dallas and missed his flight, and the only flight was a private jet, and had to, like, he was headlining a festival in LA and he had to get there. The amount of money this private jet cost was disgusting. And you're just like,
oh no.
Like,
I know what you mean now.
Yeah, and you're just like, fuck. Like,
yeah, it's wild. Have you ever been on a private jet?
Nah. Have you? I have, everybody on this podcast will know that I have this like hate for DJs that post pictures of them on a private jet.
I stand it. I hate it. It's just like, do you know what, mate? It's like getting out the car and walking to the private jet. So like, you know, mate, I'm just gonna give you my phone. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get out the car and I'm gonna walk up the steps.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, for God's sake.
It's guys. So cringe.
But like, I did a tweet about 2 years ago, yeah. Again, me just being a knobhead on Twitter and like just having a fucking joke. And I was just like, you'll never catch me in first class with taking a picture with a glass of champagne. and then in April, I did it. And I was just like, oh no, like you've become the person you hate.
That's so good. I saw Fish the other day in Ibiza and he was like, mate, I don't know why, but I got loads of people tagged you in one of my videos the other day. And I was like, I don't know. And he was like, yeah, it was just a picture of me on a private jet. And I was like, yeah, it's because I fucking hate DJs to post pictures on a private jet.
Oh, no. I mean, Fish can get away with it, though.
At the end of the day, I'm just jealous.
Yeah, of course. That's all it comes back to. Yeah. Like, if we were flying private jets every week, fucking hell, man, we'd be giving it the most.
I'd be giving it welly.
Yeah, do you know what I mean?
But, like, only on my stories. I wouldn't post an actual picture.
I don't know about that.
I think everybody that will listen to this podcast will stop listening. They'll be like, he's fake. But okay, imagine, yeah. Like, Black Coffee. Oh, we got a big shot there, mate. Like, could you imagine, like, Black Coffee literally flies everywhere private?
Yeah, I mean, that's fucking wild.
Like, fair play.
I mean, it's like Diplo's the same. It was just like when I was working with Diplo, yeah.
Mm.
I kind of went to his house in Malibu and was working and stuff. And like, I think he had like a Las Vegas residency or something. And like, there was part of me that was like, oh, is he just going to just be like, come on, just come to fly to Las Vegas when we get on the jet? You didn't, mate.
That's when you say, oh, I've never been to Las Vegas. I've always wanted to go.
Oh, I've always wanted to go on a private jet to Las Vegas. Wonder who could do that.
Right. Yeah, it's how the... I guess that's the goal, right? Is that the goal for you?
I think the goal for me, like we were saying then, is I just want to be comfortable, man.
Yeah.
If I can just be comfortable and I can, you know, continue to do this on my own terms and, you know, treat my family and friends to nice things now and again, that's it.
Yeah, it's key, man.
Like, that is it. Like, that like, I don't really... I'm not, like, I'm a very, very driven person, but I'm not, you know, I'm not bothered about having a fucking 10-bedroom house. And
yeah, same, yeah.
It doesn't really bother me. Like, if I can, like, do this on my own terms, continue to sort of travel the world and be comfy and do it alongside my family and friends, that's it. Yeah. That's it. Like, that's the dream in it, really.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. I think that's fucking perfect to end on.
Literally. It is perfect to end on. It's very nice. Wrapped it
wrap
up very
around,
nice.
Wrap that motherfucker up. before we go, how can people follow you? How can people listen to your music?
Follow me, Melee, M-E-L-E on Instagram, UK Melee on Twitter, if you want to get annoyed by tweets, obviously. And yeah, man, I'm going to try and put out a lot more music this year when I can finally... Actually, I'm going to go into the studio after this, actually. Sick. I'm inspired now. Got to actually do some fucking work.
You need to get a private jet, mate.
Oh, God. Let's see. Next year. Let's see, man.
Next year. Next year. We'll be on a private jet together.
Woo! Oh, my God. Imagine.
Imagine. Mate, thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed this. It's wicked. Hopefully, see you soon.
Yeah, man. See you soon, bro.
Big love, man. See you soon. Bye. And that is a wrap. Big love to Melee for coming. If you enjoyed it, please hit subscribe. See you soon. See you next time.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.